Hello and welcome to Fidelity Connects, the Fidelity Investments Canada podcast, connecting you to the world of investing and helping you stay ahead. Today we feature a special guest, Carlos Cardone, Senior Managing Director at Investor Economics. Carlos will be discussing wealth management trends in Canada. Carlos and his team produce research on the wealth management industry, and today he'll share with us and share with host Kelly Roberts, VP National Accounts at Fidelity, industry trends in 2020 and early 2021. And he'll reflect overall on how the industry has changed and is changing. Specifically, Carlos will share research providing findings on savings rates, young investors, and how the 2021 RRSP season set investing records, billions of dollars ahead of previous records. This podcast was recorded on March 23, 2021. The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect those of Fidelity Investments Canada ULC or its affiliates. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment, tax, or legal advice. It is not an offer to sell or buy, or an endorsement, recommendation, or sponsorship of any entity or security cited. Read a fund's prospectus before investing. Funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Fees, expenses, and commissions are all associated with fund investments.
Given so much that's happened, there'll be so many topics and trends to dive in today. Carlos, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
We were here last together in December. You provided a great summary of the year in flows. How would you characterize last year and essentially the start of 2021?
Well, 2020 was by all standards, certainly a very, very unique year in more than one way. Of course, I will speak primarily about how money has been moving around. Of course, everything connected to market effect was very unique. And we have actually seen an extraordinary amount of new money going into deposits. It was one of those years, when the markets shake, when there's certainly some uncertainty about the future, that is a very, very common trend. In 2020, the amount of new money going into deposits was an absolute record. We started to detect this trend probably around May of last year. And I will mention that, a very important factor playing here, and certainly something that we are watching very, very closely as more data becomes available, is that good part of the accumulation of the savings into deposit products seems to be entirely connected to the lockdown of the economy. So the economy locks down in Q2, and we have extraordinary amount of money going into savings accounts primarily, also other deposit products. The economy kind of reopens in Q3, and we see the amount of savings decline very, very sharply. Still high compared to previous years, certainly, but certainly one of those situations that are entirely connected to the economy as a whole, and particularly to the opportunities of households to spend money in different categories. Between flows into deposits and funds, at the end of the year, we had more than 200 billion dollars coming into the financial savings of households. This is an absolute record. It's the highest amount ever recorded for a single year. And the numbers also reveal another important trend. Still, a substantial amount of money went into market-sensitive assets. Good part of that money, of course, went through ETFs, which is something that started to change into 2021. So a couple of key takeaways out of January and February of 2021. Number one, the RSP season of 2021 was an absolute record and way, way ahead, billions of dollars ahead of previous records. Certainly a very important consideration in these kind of markets. And maybe also from what we are hearing from different organizations, particularly more on the distribution side, this is also partially answering that question of what is going to happen to all these extra additional liquidity that was accumulated during 2020. Certainly, the growing expectation is that good part of that money will find its way into the economy. But we started to see towards the end of 2020 and into 2021, how part of this money, at least and a sizable part of this money, I would say to that, is now seeking exposure to market sensitive assets and particularly equities, as we will see. Now, an important key takeaway, and this is also very typical of not only positive environments, but also very positive expectations about the future, is the amount of new money going into that category that we call standalone funds, standalone mutual funds, actually. These are the individual mutual funds, mandate by mandate, but that investors, but more often certainly advisors, choose to integrate into client portfolios. High amounts of money going into standalone type of products are usually correlated with positive expectations about the future, positive expectations, of course, about the direction of the markets, but also very positive expectations about the economy in general. Another final point, certainly out of these numbers, the total amount of money, the total flows going into ETFs weakened in early 2021. As I mentioned before, ETFs accounted for the vast majority of the money going into funds in 2020, nearly 60% of the total amount of money going into funds did so through ETFs in 2020. This number has now decreased substantially, even when compared to the RSP season of last year. And what's happening here, you know that much of what happened around market gyrations and positive equity markets and money moving around in 2020 was also connected to a few sectors of the economy, particularly technology, of course, but other sectors that were booming during the last year. And towards the end of 2020 and into this year, we started to see, I don't know if I call it a correction, but certainly we started to see some weaknesses in the valuations of some of those sectors, technology in particular. So this has actually created a bit of an environment where we're starting to see some outflows of some of those of these products. Of course, the net result is still very positive, but certainly the proportions and the weighting compared to previous cycles is now seems to be favoring, if anything, mutual funds and particularly actively managed products. Now the composition of mutual fund net flows by asset class, and you know, some very, very important takeaways out of these data. First, of course, I will bring your attention to the equity category in 2021. As I mentioned before, you know, this is a very, very clear sign of expectations about the future. It's very typical, actually, when, you know, when we see these kind of markets at some point to have these kind of significant inflows into mutual fund products. Certainly it happened before. There is also, I wouldn't call it necessarily a weakness, but certainly fixed income in general has been attracting less money in this kind of environment. And, you know, I'm not going to go into the story of what's actually happening with interest rates, but certainly interest rates have been increasing for longer maturities in particular. This is quite visible. This is having a negative impact on fixed income valuations. Money is not necessarily going out of fixed income categories at record levels, but we are seeing, and of course this is also to be expected, we are seeing a rotation, particularly across maturities, with shorter maturities in particular attracting new money. We are seeing a rotation in some cases, also in terms of products. And I would say that the weaker environment for fixed income is another factor that to an extent is also contributing to the flows, the weaker flows into ETFs in general. Certainly we've seen over the years that fixed income ETFs to a great extent, and particularly in the brokers channel, have been replacing fixed income securities. So more of the book of direct bonds holdings have been tilting towards ETF holdings. Of course, low interest rates have a lot to do with that. It's usually very, very convenient and easy to access bond portfolios through ETFs, particularly indexed ETFs, but also some actively managed ETFs have been doing very, very well in connection with fixed income. But more recently, of course, with these increases in interest rate, the general expectation that interest rates will be higher in the future, which of course plays an important role in fixed income valuations going forward, is all, if anything, conspiring to an extent against the growth of that category. And in that kind of environment, of course, certainly there's no surprise that we see so much of the money tilting towards equity and balanced exposure. Even for the balanced category, the amount of money going into balanced funds has been phenomenal. That, of course, includes the funds of fund type of portfolios. But even within these products, we're starting to see that risk profiles with a tilt towards more equity exposure are also trending in this environment. Again, you know, different sleeves of the marketplace, if anything, show and sleeves, I mean, when looking at different product categories or even distribution channels, show very, very consistent trends, if anything, towards more risk taking in terms of investing in market sensitive type of securities.
Carlos, can I stop you there? Because I find that very interesting. You're saying that it's basically, obviously, investors are feeling much more positive about markets these days and much more willing to take a risk. Is that essentially what you're saying?
Yes, yes, yes. That's generally what you see. And, you know, if you want, we can divide that into two parts. One is that when markets shake, you will always see a certain amount of investors, a certain number of investors, often through their advisors, taking opportunities provided by the market. Usually, those investors are not the majority of the investment community, and you tend to see at some point later, particularly when the forecast and the prospect for the real economy start to turn more positive, that the bulk of the investor, the bulk of the investment community, starts to acquire more exposure to equity markets. And that seems to be pretty much the cycle we are going through right now. Of course, it's a very happy coincidence that that is happening right at the start of the year with the RSP season. Of course, this is translating into very positive flows during this very important period of time for all fund companies, for all advisors, for sure. But it happened before, maybe not in sync necessarily with the RSP season, and the effect maybe not as powerful, is still very, very visible in terms of that kind of a return to equity exposure. So certainly a trend that, if anything, you know, if we look at the past, and I would caution everyone on that because it's, you know, this was a very particular time, a very particular crisis. But I would say that, you know, ceteris paribus, if things don't change too much in the near future, you would expect these kind of trends to continue at least for some time. That is usually the case in these type of cycles. We might well be at the beginning of a cycle that calls for more market sensitive assets, for more equity exposure, if the economy and everything as expected kind of continues to flourish in a post-pandemic type of scenario.
Good news for advisors, for sure.
Definitely, yes. Moving forward, I have some interesting stories here to tell you about distribution channels. Of course, everything that I've described so far in terms of product trends has been also manifesting itself in the growth of different distribution channels. And I will refer briefly to what these distribution channels are. First, the private investment council, private banking arms of the banks that usually deals with the higher end of the investing population, the full service brokerages, IIROC licensed firms. I'm sure that you know very well what those are. The financial advisor channel, this is largely the world of MFDA and IIROC dually licensed, often platforms, some of which are insurance owned, some of which are independent, some of which are mutual fund company owned, and so on. Branch advice, the channel that I referred to earlier, these are the advisors sitting at deposit taking institutions, not only because of credit unions first, and then the online discount brokerage and the robo advice channel. So what's happening here in terms of, or what happened here in terms of growth during 2020? Number one, the core advice channels, private counsel, full service brokerage, the financial advisor channel, these three channels combined account for way, way more than 50% of financial assets. And these channels also have a common, if anything, characteristic, the number of retirees and pre-retirees in these channels, which are all advice-based, is very, very significant. In the full-service brokerage, for example, the average age of clients these days is around 67 years of age, which certainly has to do with, if you mention portfolio composition, number one, these channels are some of the channels that have the highest amount of fixed income positions overall. And usually in terms of equities, there's a lot of exposure to equity income type of securities and so on. So a good part of this channel, of course, is focused on payout phase of wealth. Some of these channels certainly have grown significantly during this year, but lower than other channels. And this is to a great extent, if anything, connected again to number one, the asset mix here, the intention of many of the households, at least households that own the majority of the money in these channels in terms of drawing income, in terms of the overall exposure, of course, of this channel in general. Number two, the branches, if anything, benefited from the very substantial amount of money going into deposits during this period of time. 2020 was not a great year for the banks, generally in terms of mutual fund sales. It was rather a tough year for them too, but certainly a lot of money going into deposit products had a huge impact in terms of that growth. And then, of course, the self-directed channels, good part of the activity taking shape in 2020 in terms of new investing, in terms of new money going to securities, and so on, was driven by self-directed investors, particularly in the online discount brokerage. Of course, the growth of robo-advisors has been also very, very fast, but particularly online discount brokerage. New account openings were at record levels. We know from some evidence that we have actually collected and conversations with executives in these different distribution channels that good part of this activity is actually connected to younger audiences. Good part of the asset growth in online discount brokerage and robo advice in 2020 is explained by account owners under 35 and in many cases under 25 years of age. So certainly a newer phenomenon to see so much of the millennial and Gen Z, although generation kind of coming into investments in many cases for the first time, probably one of those additional effects of the pandemic connected overall to the amount of new savings in the hands of self-directed investors in general, particularly younger audiences.
Carlos, I'd love to ask, what is a couple things? The average account size of these online accounts, I'd love to know that number as well. I cannot help but think the CERB payments is a bit of a driver behind some of this. So can you speak to any of those, you know, thoughts
yes,
that are
definitely.
There?
Definitely. The average account or the average amount of money going into these new accounts is generally or relatively low. It's usually in the few thousand dollars. That's generally what is reported. There's no evidence that what we are seeing here are advice relationships moving online. Certainly the data doesn't show that in any shape or form. But certainly the amounts of money suggests that you know, in many cases it's a byproduct of the lockdown. For those who are working, you know, fewer opportunities to spend, just like the rest of the population. Many young people probably found themselves, maybe even in many cases for the first time, with just a few thousand dollars, and that has kind of created this environment where this money has been invested through direct channels. So certainly a very particular, a very unique element. CERB may have something to do with that. There isn't really a lot of evidence that that CERB payments are generally being saved, but certainly the you know, the fact that some of these payments may have gone into the hands of students and others that might not necessarily need that money, and particularly in the context of the lockdown, might not even have the opportunities in some cases to spend that money, might be a factor behind all of this.
That makes sense.
Yes.
Lots of information here. Give us just a little snip of some of the work you're doing at Investor Economics around some of the new studies that you're going to be doing throughout the year that we'll certainly get a chance to hear about later on.
We're working on a number of studies, but I will certainly highlight right now the Household Balance Sheet Report, which is a report that we produce every 2 years. It's the only report where we forecast the financial services industry into the future. And it's very, very interesting. I mean, we are certainly in a positive environment. I think the expectations are generally positive for the real economy and all of that, but there are still a number of wrinkles that we are looking at. There are a number of uncertain factors that are still floating around that we are looking for a little bit more evidence, of course, to forecast into the future. Of course, the direction of interest rates, the extent to which interest rates will increase, and the effect that that could have on the economy on one hand, on the deleveraging of household finances. This is a very important topic, and something that, of course, can have a direct impact on wealth accumulation patterns in the future. So certainly, I'm sure that we'll have a lot more very relevant and interesting information to share next time that that we get together for one of these debriefs.
Excellent, excellent. Much like this pandemic, you kind of never know what's going to be coming up next. And as you said, lots
exactly.
of variable work there. So thank you again for joining us, and thank you, everyone. That concludes our show today. Have a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Fidelity Connects podcast. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to Fidelity Connects on your podcast platform of choice. And if you like what you're hearing, leave a review or a 5-star rating. You can visit fidelity.ca for more information on future live webcasts. And don't forget to follow Fidelity Canada on Twitter. Thanks again. See you next time.